I'm Andy Chanley from 88.5 FM, and I'm backstage at the Pershing Square Summer Concert Series for opening night with the Bangles, who are kicking it off. Great to see you guys again.
Hey, good to see you.
You're kicking it off. Yeah, this is it. Well, Best Coast is opening,
Coast
so I guess technically, well, and Whitney Houston did the national anthem, so
technically, Whitney
opened up for you tonight. I wanted to start off by thanking the three of you because after the death last fall of 100.3 The Sound, where I was for 10 years, I went to 88.5 FM, and my first pledge drive was in April, and you guys took the time to sit down and make pledge appeals that aired during my time on the air.
Absolutely.
And it you made me look good because it ended up being the best pledge drive that
you've
ever had. So thank
you. Go, Andy.
And for the meet and greet you did at Arroyo Seco and all of that, I really appreciate that. And congratulations for kicking this thing off and taking some time to talk with me. I appreciate it. I'm a longtime fan. I was buying the records on vinyl back in Indianapolis when they came out. And I remember at the time, 18-year-old Andy would have said, they're chicks and they play their own instruments. I guess the more evolved Andy would say, what a feminist touchstone the Bangles were. It really is impressive. I mean, have you taken time to sit down and think about it? Because I was thinking the other day, you got like Joan Baez and Joni Mitchell playing acoustic guitar. You've got
Bonnie Raitt
and Carol Kaye behind the scenes.
Absolutely.
For years, all badasses. But it wasn't until Bonnie Raitt and Susie Quattro.
Yeah. Right.
And,
absolutely.
And,
Chrissy Hynde
and the Runaways.
Yeah.
I'm sure you know. And of course you know. And and then you guys come out in the early '80s. With around the same time as the Go-Go's, and have you had time to look back at what a touchstone that was, at what a significant moment it was in rock?
We haven't had time. It's only been
just rocking.
Take a moment now.
It's 30 years. We haven't had time, man.
Yeah.
No time.
We've had kids. What do you want?
No, I mean, we do think about that because it is brought to our attention and in a great way. A lot of young female guitar players will, get in touch with us, will come up to us at shows, or we'll find out about them that they were inspired by something that we did, and that's just enormous.
And female drummers, too.
Absolutely. Yes. And all women should drum.
We were very much DIY. DI, do it yourself.
Absolutely.
And I always want to not get that
DIY.
Yeah, DIY. And we were playing the clubs and just thought of ourselves as a scrappy garage band and never really cared that much if any record companies were interested in us. We were like, we're going to build this on our own. It'll happen in time. And really all it took was one. Yep. You only need one record company to like you.
Yeah.
There was no American Idol. There was no there was no platform. There was no internet. We just had a very, we were just very driven and tenacious, I think. So we did have this sort of instinct like, we're doing this, whether anybody likes it or not. And I think I'm sort of taking stock of that, sort of how kind of tough we were.
Ballsy.
We were ballsy,
yeah.
At the time.
We had ovaries.
Yeah, we were
well-developed ovaries.
Yes, and we were also just didn't give a... it'll either happen at some point or another. And so that kind of attitude, I thought, think is something I reflect back on and go, good for us. We're still like that. We don't really care.
We don't really care.
My friend Chris Carter of Dramarama, he did a Rodney Bingenheimer documentary. And it's just so much fun to watch because
the Mayor
it's...
The Mayor of the Sunset.
Is that the one you're talking about? Oh,
it's such a great... postcard. It's such a great snapshot of what L.A. looked like as a music scene in the late 60s and through the 70s. Take me back to...
We were 80s.
I know. Well, take me back to the Paisley Underground. Is that a bad term? Or is that something?
No.
Take me back to... Because that's what it was kind of termed loosely.
It was a scene. We just want to point out it's not a genre. It was a scene.
It sounds like a gay mafia, doesn't it? Paisley Underground.
Absolutely. There was punk and there was rockabilly and we were all... And there was new wave.
And we were... Yeah, and we were rebelling against... Not rebelling against that. We just weren't interested in that as much as we were completely... fascinated, obsessed with the 1960s and garage rock and psychedelic, you know, rock of the 60s and folk rock. Also.
Is that why the Rickenbacker?
Oh yeah.
Oh, part
I mean,
of it. Yeah, the birds.
Come
yeah.
on, you know,
yeah.
when you're like going to the, well, back then you'd go to records, not records,
sorry,
guitar shops.
Oh, guitar shops. Yes, I've heard of them.
When Annette and I, who we met through an ad in the paper, all of us. We went to, I don't know what, we would go to people's apartments and get their old gear.
Yeah.
It was kind of creepy, if you think about it. But yeah, that's
about my amp from Peter Case. He was not creepy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And my first guitar was actually through the recycler, how we all met too, through the same kind of Craigslist of its time, was apparently had been owned at one point by Roger McGuinn.
You believed that, did you?
I believed that. I chose to believe
you
that.
You believed that.
The funny thing that I'm thinking about the Paisley Underground is that we were always the opener.
I know.
Which may have had to do with our gender, which we need to take up with the other members.
We do need to talk to them about this.
Go. Yeah,
I'm ready. I'm ready to take them on about this.
We were always the opener, even in the heyday.
You're absolutely right.
You know what? Honestly, I tell people this now, and this is no judgment of any bands that I'm talking about here. But there was, at the peak of the Bangles, we were on tour with Mr. Mister, opening for Mr. Mister.
Right.
So
we were,
kind
I know.
Of
it's it is interesting.
I'm sort of just
you were opening
more,
for Mr. Mister?
It did happen.
We for Mr. Yeah.
On an entire tour.
We were always the opener.
See.
Although our first really big national tour was opening for Cyndi Lauper.
Yeah, which
and
was
that
awesome.
Was cool.
Which was lovely.
Let me ask you this, since you kind of touched on it. Knowing what things are like now with the Me Too movement and all of that, as you were coming up through the music industry in the 80s, is there anybody, you don't have to name names, but are there people you'd like to get into a time machine and go back and Me Too
we
the
never,
hell out of?
You or? Know what? You know what? The thing that's was sort of my point was that we, for some reason, we were always like, we're doing this.
You
we
know?
Don't need a man to say we have permission to do it. Or if no record companies like us, fine. We'll just keep playing clubs, which is exactly what we did. So I don't really feel
I think
that
we had,
ever
I think it's possible, because I have thought about this even way before the hashtag Me Too, because people have asked, you know, was there a lot of sexism, you know, back then? Oh, okay.
I mean, yeah.
Or you know, and did you have issues?
It.
There was a ton of it, and there was a ton of, I called it just tokenism, where,
absolutely.
You know, like, oh, I'm sorry, we already added a Belinda Carlisle record this week. We can't add you because
right.
you're a female.
Oh,
we
God.
Can't have more than one woman added this week.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
When I started in radio
sure you ran into
30
that
years
too,
ago, no, the program directors would say, you can't play two female acts back to back.
There can only be one cover of a female on the cover of Rolling Stone, and she has to be naked.
She has to be naked holding her breasts. Preferably.
Yeah. I mean, but what we never felt like we weren't going to get signed if we, you know,
no,
because we didn't.
Yeah, we didn't care. As she says, we weren't, we were going to do it our way.
Yeah.
And that was
for the highway.
Exactly.
Let me say a couple of names and see if you, I'm sure you know the what they have in common. The Supremes, the Shirelles, and the Bangles.
A certain chart. History?
Yes. Yeah, the only three all-female groups to have more than one chart-topping song in America.
Whoa.
Really?
Huh. According to my research.
Or the sequin dresses. Same thing.
That's,
we did,
that's
we,
pretty
that's the
heady.
That's the other thing we have in common.
We all wore sequins.
That's the other thing we have in common.
That blue sequins.
That's pretty heady company to be in, though, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it's
awesome.
Crazy. Are you kidding me?
These are icons for us.
Yes, major.
Wow.
I was listening to one of those songs. Eternal Flame was playing in the middle of the day on 88.5 last week. And
thank
I
you
heard
for
it.
That.
And it was so great. And I turned it up, and it was just right for that moment. And I was listening to it, and I went on the internet, which I advise you to do. It's a great deal of fun.
Oh, I've heard of
and,
it.
And you can believe everything that's on there.
Sometimes.
Can you believe everything that's on there? Here's a couple of things. Tell me if these are true or not.
That's true.
Number one.
Wikipedia is true.
That Elvis inspired it?
Yes.
Well
not
obliquely.
Elvis. His
Graceland.
We did our tour.
Dead
of
Elvis actually inspired
we
it.
We went to Graceland on because that's what you do when you're playing
in Memphis.
Of course.
Memphis. And and then we did. It was raining, and we went outside in the garden of the Memorial Garden.
Garden of Memories. Thank you.
And we wanted to do our moment like Spinal Tap, so we were singing Heartbreak Hotel in bad harmonies, raga harmonies. And Michael Steele, our bass player, then she pointed at the Eternal Flame. It was a plexiglass box, and the flame was off, and it was just
full of rainwater.
So cut to raining. A month later, we're back home, we're writing for the next album, I'm sitting down with Billy Steinberg, I tell him that story, and he says, stop. Eternal Flame, that's a really good title for a song, and boom, we just wrote the lyrics.
But it was the semi-Eternal Flame.
Yeah,
it was the semi-Eternal Flame. So it did a little
and
edit.
The other little unknown fact that you actually sang it naked.
Yes.
I'm asking for a
friend. Semi-naked.
Okay, David Sigerson is to blame.
It's all David's fault.
So he had this...
Semi-naked.
He was a very nice producer, though, right?
Lovely man.
So he would want each girl...
The best.
He would have each of us come in on different nights. Yes. And then he would, like, trick out the studio a certain way for you or have your favorite wine or something, right?
No, just for you, Sue.
It was only
for you,
so,
actually.
So, I don't know. They told me a joke. Because I did actually... get in this middle school yearbook most gullible, which is a very
this is true
to get. I got two things in the school. What do you call it?
Popularity.
Yeah. I got Shirley Temple.
Oh boy. Shirley Temple.
Because
being little and like a song and dance, curly hair. And then I got these are things you don't want to get in middle school in the yearbook, okay? Let me just tell you.
I got most likely to sell dog food on television.
I didn't get the good categories were. Like most likely to succeed or whatever. I got Shirley Temple and Most Gullible. Yeah. So they told us a story, Bev Jones, who was the engineer, and David, who was a very
mischievous man,
said they had just done an Olivia Newton-John record, and they go, we want you all to become, it's just a little fun fact, she sings everything naked. And I'm like, what, really? And like, yeah, she gets her best vocals that way. I was like, well, I want my best vocals.
Clever gentleman.
Great.
I bought it.
Was that a Me Too moment? No.
No, because I wanted it. And by the way, they couldn't see me.
Yeah, right.
There was a folding.
Sure, it was a two-way mirror.
But they would listen to the sound of the sweatpants.
This is the thing.
I also had seen that movie, you know, about like, what was it, the baseball movie where they all have their superstitions?
Bull Durham,
where he's wearing a garter or something.
Oh, yeah,
so I had my lucky singing outfit. Yeah. Yeah. And so it was just sweats and a t-shirt. It was like the least sexy outfit you could ever have in the world. And so, but they would turn on the microphone. I'd be behind the baffle and they'd be, okay, you ready? And you'd go, hold on. And you just, they'd wait for the sound.
Just before.
Hitting the floor. I was like, okay.
This is before phones.
Now I have a picture in my mind of Libby Newton-John naked singing Have You Never Been Mellow.
That's not a bad thing. She's so gorgeous.
she apparently did.
She did not. It was all a lie.
It's all their fantasy of it.
That's so funny.
It's been a long time since you've been together. You grew up basically together.
No,
we never grew up.
No, I
we
mean,
never grew
I mean,
up.
over the last period of years, you've
100 years.
Childhood.
No, right. You guys from Northridge, right?
Yes, absolutely. Shout out to Northridge.
You've matured and throughout your lives and had some children and gotten married to a director, a musician, a recording engineer. And I'm curious, do you think that it's easier being in the industry to be married to someone who's in the industry, in the entertainment industry?
Interesting question. I think it's nice to be married to someone who's an artist for me that understands that is what makes me happy doing art.
That's important.
Making art.
Yeah.
My husband's a touring musician. He tours with the Beach Boys, and he's out most of the year. And we were just discussing
John Cousel,
absolutely. And it takes a special kind of twisted woman to be able to understand and deal with that, you know, the fact that we have a long distance relationship most of the time. We have, you know, you have to schedule the conjugal visits.
John, wait for the sound. This is the sound of my clothes dropping.
The sound of my clothes dropping to the floor.
Sound of the sweats now, hitting the floor.
We have FaceTime. It's okay. We don't have to do that.
The sound
is good. It's sexier. It's sexier.
More like
to work on that.
I know you guys have to go out on stage here in just
what?
A second.
We got
to
work.
One last question. It seems to me like you play concert, like you sell out this thing in a flash. You play a Royal Seiko and are welcomed there as liberators. You play basically when you want to, and it seems like when you don't want to, you do other things.
Right.
What are those other things? What do you do that makes you happy that has nothing to do with this?
There's so many things. Writing, recording music with other people, you know, just playing music. I traveled to New Orleans and worked with Susan Cousel and the Continental Drifters this summer. Did a record last year with Bill Mumy and John Cousel. Just a lot of and gardening.
I was waiting for that.
Waiting for the gardening.
For me, well, been a full-time mom for quite a while, and but now I'm getting back into painting. I want to do oil painting and drawing, and I'm gonna go take lots of classes and get into that more full-time.
Excellent.
Yeah.
I've made some records with Matthew Sweet, and I'm recording my own record now and collaborating with different people and writing as well, working on a novel, actually.
Really?
Yes.
Yes, we're doing lots of different things.
But by the way, I was reading, and Ming Ti came about before Austin Powers.
Yes.
That's a story for another day, I guess.
We'll have to do another chapter.
Workshop, Mike workshopping Austin. And he's like, any spy in the 60s would have to have a band.
Right.
That's true.
And you were.
Gillian
Shagwell?
Gillian, darling. Yes.
Fantastic.
But Annie, we do, and it's still secret. But I'm gonna give you a little hint about something that we have been working on. I don't think we're allowed to talk about it yet. But I'm gonna tell you that we're gonna be all over 88.5 with this project coming up.
You can guess
what
it
worry.
Is. Yeah, I love it.
Yep.
I like it.
So just little tease there for you.
And can we just point out this beautiful girl over here, Annette Zielinskis, our original bass player extraordinaire, who we connected
Bangs.
On the Recycler, where we were getting gear and
Bangs
each other.
Gal.
And how I met these guys, too. We all met each other.
Kelsey Northridge.
Salute.
There you go.
He's been playing with us again.
Yeah. That's fantastic.
And having fun.
It's so rare for a band. 30. I don't want to do the math. You do the math. That many years later, the exact people who put it together, who were the band back in 1981. Same people who played.
Full circle, guys. Full circle.
It's pretty special.
That's fun.
We're still alive.
It's very rare.
And they play their own instruments, I've heard.
And they do. Don't tell anyone.
Thank you once again for the kindness you've shown 88.5, the station. It means the world.
We love it.
Thanks for kicking
off the
Pershing Square Concert Series. And for anybody that's hearing this, you've got to get your tickets through eventbrite.com. Go to the website and get them quickly because they're going quickly. They just want to make sure everybody has a great experience here. But thank you so much for doing this. Thanks for sitting down. Debbie Peterson, Vicki Peterson, and Susanna Hoffs, the Bangles. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Annie.